From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection, Nebraska Family Alliance's weekly radio show, keeping you updated on everything related to family, freedom, and life, while covering big developments from the state capitol here in Lincoln. And it was a big week. A big week. We had a handful of candidates announcing their campaigns for seats in the Nebraska legislature. We had a historic case before the Supreme Court dealing with the liquor stores in White Clay, a case that has been building for a long time that really this could be the final ruling that we'll get from the Supreme Court. So before I get into that, first, I want to turn my and everyone else's attention towards Texas and the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey, the photos and videos that have been coming across on social media and televisions have really been heartbreaking, and it's just hard to imagine that much devastation and what that is like. So our thoughts and prayers are with everyone who is down in Texas. And, you know, I've heard it said that certainly no one ever deserves something like this to happen, but Texas sure is making our country proud the way they are responding to this. The devastation has been so grand, but the response from people in Texas and around the country has been incredible to see, just the outpouring of support, not just sending prayers, but people from all across the country going down to help rescue folks, provide food and water and shelter, and making donations has really been incredible to see. And this has even included folks from Nebraska who have really stepped up. The Omaha World Herald reported earlier this week that a group from Nebraska rescued 350 people from the flooded Houston area. And this effort included 80 members from the Nebraska Task Force 1 assisting with evacuating 120 people from a nursing home. There are firefighters from the Omaha, Lincoln, and Papillion fire departments down in Texas. And I believe the Nebraska National Guard has also sent crews and supplies and equipment. So it's tremendous to see Nebraskans stepping up, as well as people from all across the country helping out Texas. Our thoughts and prayers are with you, and God bless Texas. What to do about White Clay, Nebraska? That is the question before the Nebraska Supreme Court now. After this past week, they heard oral arguments on what will be the final appeal from the four liquor stores in White Clay who sell approximately 3.5 million cans of beer every year in a town of only 8 official residents, with, of course, most, if not all of that, going to the legally dry Pine Ridge Reservation, which is 200 yards north of the Nebraska border in South Dakota. And this issue has been around for a long time. It's a case that has been developing, and there's been a lot of lawsuits and new developments coming back and forth from both sides, those advocating for closing down the stores and those fighting to keep them open. And it's been a heated issue, really. What should be done about these stores? They sell a legal product. It's not their fault what people do with the alcohol. It's adults making bad decisions. But then you look at what's happening on the Pine Ridge Reservation, where it is estimated that one out of every four children born there are born with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which is an incurable disorder that leaves the child with severe physical and mental disabilities for life. It's also preventable, and yet it's happening at a higher rate than anywhere in the world, right across our border. We also know that in the very streets of White Clay in our border, happening in Nebraska, people are drinking publicly, passing out, being assaulted. There are reports of trafficking taking place. A lot of violence taking place, as well as clearly a substantial amount of bootlegging. And all of this has been going on for decades, and we finally reached a tipping point that led to the Nebraska Liquor Control Commission revoking those licenses from the four beer stores. And the liquor stores have appealed this to the Nebraska Supreme Court. And really, the case comes down to very technical legal arguments dealing with jurisdiction and legal process, and whether or not the Nebraska Liquor Control Commission had the authority or did the right thing in forcing the beer stores to fill out a long form application for their licenses instead of having them automatically renewed. But what should not be lost in all of this is the human lives that have been so impacted by the alcohol from White Clay. And to me, it really became clear that simply continuing to do nothing was no longer an option, because people and innocent women and children were literally being hurt every day, not just in Pine Ridge, but in the very streets of White Clay. And things couldn't just continue on unchanged. There was a clear lack of law enforcement in the area. People were not safe. And frankly, it's hard to imagine a more lawless place in the United States than White Clay in our very own state. But you don't have to just take my word or my opinion for it. I have a special guest on the show today. Her name is Nora Basem, and she lives in South Dakota near the Pine Ridge Reservation, near White Clay, and she has actually fostered more than 100 children, and she has adopted many kids as well who have fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. She is someone who has seen what's going on there firsthand, but she also works with the people there coming from the Pine Ridge Reservation. She's also a social worker and an expert on behavioral health and fetal alcohol syndrome. And we're going to talk about this issue head on. Was closing the stores in White Clay the right decision? Was that the right thing to do? What's been going on in and around White Clay? And what people need to know, because this really is a human life issue. And no one has a better understanding of what's been going on there than my next guest. So I'm pleased to have joining me on the program now, Nora Basem, who is a speaker and advocate and a foster mother to over 100 children, including many with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder born on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Nora, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Nora, I mentioned that you have actually fostered more than 100 kids, and you've adopted children who have fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, and there have been a number of newspaper articles about you and your story. And one piece from the Omaha World Herald talks about how your husband told you to stop crying about lost babies and do something. What made you say, enough is enough, I'm going to do something to help these kids and take on raising and loving these children that many people don't think twice about?
I guess, honestly, the wake-up moment for me was when we took our first three foster children in to be diagnosed. We didn't know what was wrong. We knew there were issues. Prior to that, we had said we wouldn't parent a child with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder because I just didn't feel like I had the skill to do it, honestly. We took our kids in. They all three actually were diagnosed with fetal alcohol syndrome. And I said, so where do we go from here? What do we do? And I was told by the doctor, well, you know, thank God you haven't adopted them. You should give them back. And basically that there was no hope. And leaving there with a 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 2-year-old, and looking at them and thinking, so I'm supposed to just give up on them and, like, give them back because I don't feel like they're going to fit into my life, was really a wake-up call to me, because we loved those children. They were wonderful children. Yes, they definitely had their unique behavioral issues and kind of some unique coping skills. But that's when I really got down with, what do I do? And my husband basically did the whole, you know, pull your bootstraps up and make a decision. If you're you know, if you're going to do this, let's do it. Let's do it right. Let's figure out what to do. And so we started researching, and actually that's what sent me back to school to learn everything I could about the brain and how to change things for a child with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And that's also when we talked to the social workers as far as fostering and said, if we're going to do this, we can only take children that were prenatally exposed because we're going to change everything about how we parent, how we live, how we look at things. And that doesn't work with a neurotypical child. You know, it only works for these children. And at first they were like, oh, you know, having one with FASD is hard enough. We don't want to overload you. But then they saw that it did work best, that kids in our home really can thrive and do well. And so, you know, that's why we started fostering only children that were prenatally exposed.
Wow. So you actually went back to school in order to learn more about this and how to best help take care of these kids. So for our listeners, what is fetal alcohol syndrome exactly, and what does it look like?
Anyone who drinks, you know, a lot of people are like only alcoholic moms. Here's the false thing. Anyone who's drinking and is sexually active and can get pregnant has the chance of having a child with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder because, you know, every woman I've ever talked to will say, well, I quit as soon as I knew I was pregnant. Okay, well, that can be, you know, 7 to 15 weeks into the pregnancy. The brain is forming from the very beginning. You know, that brain and those brain cells are there that need to replicate and form a healthy brain. And I'm talking about the brain today, but honestly, with drinking, alcohol is, you know, a teratogen. It affects any cell in the body. So people with FASD can actually have issues with bones, heart, lungs, anything. But the main thing we talk about is their brain, because it does change their brain and their ability to think and process the way we do. A lot of these kids who are never diagnosed are seen as a lot of negative messages, like, you know, they don't care, they don't try, they don't have any remorse. And it's more their fact that they don't understand. Most often with FASD, they're very concrete thinkers. So, you know, they do exactly what you say and no more. I had a mom who said, my son's trying to drive me crazy. You know, all he needs to do is take the garbage out. He opens the front door, throws it out the door, grins at me. And, you know, that's all he does. And I said, well, but that's all you're asking for. You need to tell him where to take the garbage. And she said, no, he's 16 years old. He knows better. I said, try it. And, you know, she called back and said, oh my gosh, he did it. You know, that's the problem, is that a lot of times what we see as opposition, defiance, is misunderstanding, inability to understand the words that you're saying versus the words they're hearing, cause and effect thinking, like doing the same behavior over and over and getting in trouble for it and not understanding why they're getting in trouble for it. You know, these kids are very active. They have a hard time soothing themselves. They'll often do self-harm behaviors to try to soothe themselves. Just a lot of things that you kind of start thinking, why do they keep doing this again and again, and it's not changing no matter what I do? You know, anytime that you're dealing with someone that you are going around and around the loop, I always say that's a good time to start looking into their past. You know, was there any possibility that alcohol or drugs were present, you know, during the pregnancy? And a lot of times that's the clue that's missing. So
with fetal alcohol syndrome, there is no cure. It happens in the womb while the child is developing, and the child is then left with oftentimes severe mental and physical disabilities for life. So we have this incurable but entirely preventable disorder. And Nora, you're in South Dakota. You're fairly close to both the Pine Ridge Reservation and White Clay. And we know that the fetal alcohol syndrome rate on the Pine Ridge Reservation is really, you know, it's a crisis. It's an epidemic proportion. So as someone who is living there and experiencing this, is the rate of fetal alcohol syndrome, is it that high? Is that 1 in 4 estimate? Is that an accurate estimate in your mind?
No, I think it's probably higher.
You think it's higher than 1 in 4 children?
I would really love to do an active study. You know, there's an 80% alcoholism rate. So honestly, the 1 in 4 estimate was an Indian health study estimate actually in the 70s. There has been no further study of prevalence on Pine Ridge. So I'm going to argue that I think it's probably higher.
Wow. I mean, it's just shocking. And it's almost hard to imagine just what that does to people. And Nora, is it right that one of the mothers of your kids actually started giving birth actually in the streets of White Clay?
Yes. Most of the kids that we have fostered or adopted are pretty much direct consequences of the alcohol in White Clay. And, you know, for years I've fought against White Clay and talked about White Clay, and I've had a lot of people yell at me that I'm ignorant, that closing White Clay will not change anything. And here's the thing. I know that closing White Clay beer stores did not cure addiction, and I never thought it would. However, it did change the ability for people to just walk 200 yards to get alcohol and end up sleeping on the streets and being abused and harmed on the streets of White Clay. I mean, I used to work one day a week in the Pine Ridge High School, and I would go on my lunch hour to White Clay, and you would see, I mean, I followed vehicles that were trying to get drunk people in them, you know, and you would just see things that you could never see anywhere else. People lying in the middle of the road. One woman got thrown out of a car in the middle of the road with her underwear around her ankles. You know, it was fairly obvious she'd been assaulted, and we would call for help and no one would come. You know, it wasn't just the drinking. It was the level of lawlessness and hopelessness that White Clay brought. There's been such a change this summer in the fact that a lot of the youth who felt like there's no hope, no one cares about what's going on with us, the fact that people did something about White Clay has changed their mind and will help that generation feel like maybe there's more for me, and maybe I don't need to just end up drinking like all of my relatives are right now. And I'm not saying everyone on Pine Ridge drinks, because that's not true. And there's some beautiful families who all, you know, are praying for family members who have alcoholism issues and want better for them, and definitely want better for future generations. And they're trying their best. But for a long time, what was happening in White Clay was kind of that slap in the face of no one out there really cares. We're trying to have a dry reservation. We're trying to do the best we can for our people, our families, and, you know, everyone else is out there really not caring. So I think that closing White Clay, at the very least, gave a lot of people hope. And it has changed the amount of emergency phone calls for drunk and disorderly and needing to remove children immediately. Over the summer, those rates have gone down. I think that, you know, more people have sought help with addictions and getting some aftercare. You know, I do think it was the first piece of the puzzle of helping to work on addiction on Pine Ridge. And people can argue with me, and that's fine. I may be wrong, but I've seen the changes. So,
well, and you know, that's really the thing. I know this is such it's a difficult issue, and it's very personal to you, but I appreciate you sharing all of that. This has been an issue that's been building for a long time, with heated debate on what, if anything, should be done and whether the beer stores should remain open or not. And I think that's something a lot of people have instantly jumped to, is that closing the stores isn't going to solve any problems. It's not going to stop people from buying alcohol. But that was never really the point. So I appreciate you articulating what was going on and what the consequences have been of stopping the sale of alcohol in White Clay. And really, the cost has been far greater than I think most people realize. And you've seen that cost firsthand. When we're talking about the cost of human life, what does that cost look like?
Well, honestly, just to use one child, you know, people talked about the revenue brought forth from the white clay liquor sales. And I could be wrong, but I had read somewhere that I think the tax was like $400,000 a year or somewhere around there that was brought in. And, you know, to me, that makes me kind of laugh because our one daughter, who is a definite product of white clay, her hospitalizations alone in under 6 years are over $5 million, and her monthly upkeep, and by that I mean just the medications and medical supplies to take care of her every month, and that doesn't include any sicknesses or extra stuff, is over $16,000 a month, and that's one child. And she's not that unique. There's a lot more children out there. We have several in our home that, you know, cost that. And so I think that in looking at that and realizing that, you know, FASD costs the country over $5 billion every year. And I really question if we really know exactly what just FASD on Pine Ridge costs.
You talked about one of your daughters being a direct product of white clay and the alcohol sold there and what it did to her while she was entirely innocent and vulnerable developing in the womb. So what I wanted, one thing I've wanted to ask you, Nora, is what's your reaction when you hear people use the phrase, my body, my choice?
You know, I got to tell you, I met a young man who is one of my biggest heroes. His name is Morgan Redmond Fawcett. And Morgan has FAS and very severe medical issues because of his mom's drinking. And he always says there are no perpetrators in FASD, only victims. He doesn't blame his mom. And he'll say, you know, you're right, it is your body, but would you really want to cause the suffering that I've had? I mean, if you knew, if you could look at my life and look at what I've gone through, is that drink honestly worth it to you? And I guess that's what I would want women to know, is I wish they could come spend some time holding my daughter when she's going through all the painful procedures she goes through all the time, watching her fight for her life when she gets a cold. And I would ask the same question, is a glass of wine or that beer in your hand honestly worth putting a child through this?
Wow, Nora, I can't thank you enough for the work that you are doing defending these children and looking out for their rights and bringing them into your home and loving them. It's inspiring. And so my last question, how can anyone listening who wants to help, how can they help support you, your efforts, and children diagnosed with FASD?
We are working hard on continuing to bring education and actually trying to get a clinic opened for diagnostics on Pine Ridge. And if anyone is interested in helping financially, they can send to our nonprofit, which is Roots to Wings. And we have a Facebook page. It's Roots to Wings, FASD. And on there, you know, anyone who wants to find out about what's going on, what we're working on, where our newest conferences, workshops are, we always put everything up there. We try to keep up to date with research. If anyone's interested in helping with any of our ministry work or any of the work that we're trying to do, you know, please contact us and we would gladly give you out the information you would need to help with that.
Nora, thank you again for being on the show today. I'm so incredibly grateful for the work that you are doing. You are a champion for those who have often been forgotten. And it's just so encouraging to know that there are people like you out there working and fighting for these kids.
Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
A decision from the Nebraska Supreme Court is expected to come on this case within the next 2 months. For more information on everything related to family, freedom, and life, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. Nebraska Family Alliance is the state affiliate of Focus on the Family and part of a national movement to stand for truth, protect religious liberty, and ensure all life is cherished and protected. Learn more at NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. I'll be back next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.